Getting ready to take on spring? Make your first move with the reliable performance and power of Steel battery tools. From hedge trimmers and mowers to string trimmers and more, right now you can save $50 on select battery tool sets. Real Steel. Offer valid on select AK system sets through June 16, 2024. See participating retailer for details.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Pistol Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
It's time for a Big Blue Kickoff Live.
Nobody can ever tell you that you couldn't do it, because you did.
On Giants.com.
You know what I saw? New York Giant Prime.
And the Giants mobile app.
17-14 is the final. One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Part of the Giants Podcast Network.
Let's go out there like a bunch of crazy dogs. That's some fun.
Happy Tuesday, everybody, and welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com and the Giants mobile app. Thrilled to be with the big man, Howard Cross, on this Tuesday. We had some machinations this week, which we finally figured out after putting Howard in a bad spot yesterday. I apologize for that.
Totally right.
It's all presented by Cadillac, which Howard got to drive around a lot yesterday when he came back and forth from here twice. The official luxury vehicle of the New York Football Giants. We're going to get to a lot of your calls, folks. 201-939-4513. We'll try to do as many calls as we can. 201-939-4513. It's the first time we're here for a victory week, Howard, because we were out there in San Francisco for the last one.
That's true.
It's a little bit different being back in the building off of a win. And look, you aren't going to send the offensive tape to Canton. There were 18 punts. It was 14-7. But a win is a win is a win is a win. And you got to talk about the defense in this game. They were flat out dominant, and it started with the defensive line.
It did. You know, Dex was playing out of his mind. You know, I felt kind of bad for Nick Gates. I was happy for him to be playing, but he caught Dexter when Dexter was being the man.
Dexter grumpy.
And you got Leonard out there. He's dancing now. So I'm like, okay, you got Dex and Leonard dancing. And Thibodeau comes off the edge really well. For the first time that I've seen him in a while, coming off the edge with some power and some strength.
And he was winning outside too, which he hasn't been doing much.
And lucky he got himself a little bend there. So that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't say enough about Banks, the rookie corner. I'm telling you, this kid is having some kind of a year. I mean, one play, I think, big on him. But outside of that.
Two plays
big on him. Mm-hmm. But outside of that, he figured it out really quickly. And he was holding down their best receivers.
Now, I got to be honest with you. I miss, you know, my role changed a little bit this year for the people that I don't know. So I'm doing the pre and post game now.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite things during the games is I produced the games, and I would be on with Howard during the game, and we would just chat back and forth.
Uh-huh.
And I usually get some nice insights from what you see at the sideline during the game, and it's really useful because you see different things from downstairs. Now I don't have the chance to do that.
Yep.
So one thing I noticed from upstairs, and I'd like to get your take on it, and I don't think it was brought up. It wasn't brought up on our broadcast. I'm not sure if it was brought up on TV.
Mm-hmm.
But Banks was chatty with Terry McLaurin.
The chirping the entire
my goodness, was he chatty. Time. And you could tell Terry McLaurin was like, dude, like.
Terry started it.
Did he?
Oh, yeah, he started. Like, okay, rookie. He's like, rookie. Okay. It went from that point, it was on. So I enjoy guys that, you know, have a little fun out there. And that's just all in the fun of the game. You're getting yours on, and you're playing against one of the best, and he's not getting you, so to speak. So I enjoy that a lot.
Yeah, and look, I thought the first half, they weren't lined up together one-on-one quite as much as they were in half number two. But in half number two, you know, when they were in man, he was on McLaurin. Again, to your point, he beat him twice over the top. But it wasn't, by the way, bad coverage on those plays either. It was just well-thrown balls, and McLaurin kind of got
and
used
one time
his
he didn't
savviness
get, he didn't
body
get his
position.
Head around. He didn't get his head around one time. That was it. Because I saw Jackson come over and say, hey, look, right when he's putting his hands here, that's when you turn. He goes, I know, I just didn't.
And that is something he needs to get better at. Because that is something we've seen over the course of the year. He doesn't get his head around. He still sometimes makes a little too much contact down the field with some flags. But you love his physicality.
I love it.
You love him bumping guys at the line. Mm-hmm. You like his confidence. And plays don't bother him, by the way.
No,
like, he makes a big play. Like, And this is going to sound like an insult, but it's not. He doesn't think a lot, right? He doesn't overthink things in terms of getting in his head when a bad play happens.
I think it's more, you should say it like, he has very, very little short-term or no short-term memory.
Good way to put it. Correct.
He just doesn't have it. Yes. He does really good at it. So I like that a lot. I like the way that...
He has to make sure McLaurin's down on that one play before looking at the official, though.
He was down.
No, I know he was down, but he has to make sure that McLaurin's down before he looks at the official.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like our linebacker play. That they came up, they got it going.
McFadden
they,
continues to play well, man.
And I think the thing that I complained about or didn't complain about, but what pointed out is that in the first few weeks of the season, they weren't gang tackling.
Yeah, they are now.
Now there are nine guys on the clip, or it's nine guys getting off the play. That makes a big difference. I don't care who you're playing against. If you get that many guys around, you're going to get the guy to the ground.
Yeah, and look, I can't say enough good things about the defense. Mm-mm. And obviously late, they caught a little bit of a break. Sam Howell threw it behind the receiver. It could have been a completion. But that goes back. I mentioned how they were the big guys up were winning up front. You mentioned Thibodeau, Leonard, and of course Dexter.
Mm-hmm.
They also, I thought the Washington offensive line had trouble figuring out who to block. There were a lot of free runners at the quarterback. Pinnock was a free runner at the quarterback. Yeah. McFadden once had a free run at the quarterback. And then on the final play, Isaiah Simmons had a free run at the quarterback. And now he's got to make that play and bring the quarterback down. Howell did a good job of spinning out of it and making the play. But I thought Wink did a good job of scheming things up to give that Washington front a lot of trouble trying to figure out who to block. And he created a lot of rush opportunities just off a scheme.
I think he did, but I think the bigger reason is Dexter in the middle. Dex was unbelievable. And when there's a guy that's right in the middle of your offensive line and he's coming and two guys can't stop him, then it becomes a problem for, well, who do you got? I got to kind of help over here. Before I do my job.
So
could you put your hand out a little bit, give me some help before you go out there? No, this guy's going to run by me. Then the guy between you runs through. So it's a lot. That's what happens when you have a guy. You see that all the time with some of the best defensive tackles in the league. When they start getting off, everybody else starts getting off.
Yeah, and then let's go to the offensive side of the ball here, Howard, before we get to your phone calls. Again, we see a full bank of calls. I'll get to you very quickly here at 201-939-4513. Pardon me. And I'm going to go back to the explosive way it plays again. Even though they lost to the Bills 14-9 in that game, Howard, actually outgained the Bills in terms of explosive plays 4-1 in that game. Giants had four plays of 20-plus yards. Mm-hmm. Bills had just one. And in this game, Washington had a couple of big plays, one of 27 yards, one of 31 yards.
Mm-hmm.
Giants had three plays of 30 yards or more, seven plays of 20 yards or more.
Okay.
It's probably the most explosive plays they've had in a game other than that Arizona game in two or three seasons. And it was a good mix of things. It was Tyrod Taylor, a couple really nice passes over the top to Jalin Hyatt, who did a good job of stacking the cornerback on one of those plays.
Yeah.
He got Waller on a deep crosser once, which I thought he did a really good job of, right?
Yep.
Then you had a couple of short passes and run after catches. We saw the impact of Saquon.
Mm-hmm.
Simple pass on a little option route into the flat, turns it upfield, turns into a 30-yard touchdown. Mm-hmm. Wando Robinson caught that quick little pass in the flat for 5 yards. He turns it upfield, makes three guys miss. He gains 20 yards in that play. A good play-action design where they kind of did a half roll to the right. Waller crossed back to the left-hand side. He hit Waller. He turned upfield, had a 20-yard gain. So, and then Tyrod Taylor had a 20-yard scramble up the middle on one of those design draws. So
absolutely,
it was a good combination of different types of plays to get those explosives, and every one of the Giants' scoring drives had an explosive play in it. They make all the difference.
Well, they do make all the difference, but you know, we can't overstate the importance or what Saquon did to the game, because you could tell when he would run and take the ball up the middle, and then all of a sudden when they would try to fake the ball to him, the entire defense would shift as he's faking. And one time that's the hit to Waller you're talking about that got a 20-yard gain.
Yep.
The other times I believe he's rotating or being faked to on the other side as they throw the ball out the window. Half the defense is leaving Robinson over there by himself as he catches the ball because they're trying to follow. Okay, we got to follow Saquon. We don't want this guy to break out and have a big play. And those are some of the plays that happen. The reason why that happens, the offensive line has been playing a little bit better. And I mean, and I don't want to give them like the greatest kudos in the world, but they've been playing better. There wasn't 11 sacks. There wasn't 15 to 20 hits.
Aside from the Arizona game, this was their best game of the year.
Yeah, so it's, without the 11 sacks, without the 15 hits, all of a sudden things look a little better in the offense. It helps.
And by the way, the defense helps that too because you're playing with the lead and you can do different things offensively.
Well, you know, and people are like, well, they didn't do very well on third downs. Like, no, they didn't do well on third down. I'm like, but they didn't have a lot of third downs. That's why they were, you know, explosive plays.
5 of 16 on third down.
Yeah, but explosive plays keep the third downs down.
Right.
And that's what they were getting. They were getting, you know, big chunks of plays, big chunks here, big chunks there. That moves the ball down the field and give you a chance to score. When you had third down, it didn't do that well because still, that means the offensive line is going to have to hold up versus their best pass rushers because they're going to put their best package in to come and get the quarterback. And especially if you're over 5 yards where you can't get the ball out quick, you're just not going to have a lot of success unless your guys can hold up.
Yeah, and I'll say this too. I thought Tyrod Taylor played another nice game. Again,
I did. I think he made some good
passes down the field. He got the ball out pretty quick. He ran when he had to. He evaded a couple of the pressures that came in to avoid sacks. And look, this is why you paid him to be a high-priced backup quarterback. Yeah, he's come in. He's done a really nice job.
I think he's done a good job. I think again, but I also think that they're blocking a little better for him.
Yeah, and he has Saquon Barkley, which to your point, look, and look,
Saquon means a lot.
The analytics say, and maybe big picture, the entire league, this is true, that the quality and how well you're running the ball on the running back doesn't impact the power of play action.
Mm-hmm.
But I have seen, rewatching these games on tape this year, the way teams reacted to the Giants' play action game when Saquon was injured versus how they react to the play action game when Saquon is in the game, it is night and frickin' day.
It is
completely different.
All you gotta do is look at players like Christian McCaffrey. When they fake the ball to Christian McCaffrey, people are following him with their eyes and their bodies, or they're shifting, trying to stay in front of him to make sure. Because again, like Saquon, a little space, and all of a sudden they could be going to the house. You don't want that. You don't want that guy out there one on one with somebody, especially Saquon comes out. That's what happened. His long catch. He gets out. He's outside. Everybody shifted trying to follow the other way. They're like, okay, Saquon's like, we'll get to him. One guy got there, missed. And then all of a sudden it's a foot race.
He's out the door.
Yeah, you can't do that. You can't do that with big time back. So, you know, you can't do that with those two receivers either. You can't do it with Hyde, and you can't do it with Slayton. So they've got some guys that are going to start making a big difference.
The other thing that I really like what Tyrod Taylor does, and this is something that I know that we're probably going to get the calls about this.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I think Tyrod does well, and I think Daniel could copy a little bit, when Tyrod sees the opponent in cover one, right, which is single high safety, man to man, he says, I have Jalin Hyatt outside, one on one. I'm just throwing it over the top, and I'm letting him run at the ball.
I'm going to do you one better. I think since Coach Dable has started sitting in on these offensive plays and started sitting in and trying to like make sure that he's getting the message across what he wants, you're seeing more of it.
Okay.
And when Coach says in the presser, yeah, Hyatt's been, you know, has grown a lot in the offense. I think he knows everything. We're going to start getting him the ball. He says that. That's also connected to Saquon being in the game. It's also connected to a little better blocking.
100%. All this is connected.
All that stuff is connected. So, you know, not to take anything away from Tyrod, but there are a lot of good things happening to help to make that possible. Because what we said in the beginning of the year was, if the offensive line just holds up, we'll have explosive plays.
And by the way, it's not
and
like
they didn't.
And by the way, it's not like Daniel hasn't done that or is incapable of doing. We saw him make a couple of those throws to Darius Slayton this year down the sideline on a cover one, so we can do it. But I think now you're seeing some of these things that work a little bit.
When you have
a little bit better protection, you're able to do all these things. And you're playing with a lead.
Yeah, and Saquon, you know, besides all of everything else he does so good, he actually has grown in his pass protection, him pulling up into the line and stopping guys. And I was like very impressed by that. Just seeing him do that, I'm like, oh, okay, well, here he goes, linebacker on Saquon. He steps up, pops him, like, okay.
And that improvement had started last year, and I think it's definitely continued to this year.
Yeah, and that right there is a big help, because all of a sudden it ain't 6-on-5 anymore. Now it's 6-on-6.
Anything else you took out of the game, Howard, that you want to get to before I get to the calls?
I think that, you know, I know people were kind of hard on the Shep, but that's not really Shep's fault. I think that what happens is
you were on the field. Talk about the conditions and what you saw doing.
First off, Banks is a starting returner. So Banks was trying to
You mean get, Gray.
Gray, sorry. Yep. Gray's a starting returner. And he was having trouble filling the ball, right? And I don't think everybody kind of realized the wind blows from Giant sideline to the visiting team sideline. It doesn't blow from end zone to end zone anymore. You have a left-footed punter. The ball is spinning in a different direction than it does when you have a right-footed punter.
Now, in fairness, they do practice against a left-footer punter in practice every day.
That's
so
true.
They should be used to it.
Should be used to it. But it just looks different when it's going that high.
Sure.
So I'm like, okay, well, let's see what happens. Let's figure out.
Tris Wade, by the way, is an excellent punter. He's one of the best punters in the league.
Yeah, and it had a lot of hang time on it, so it got a little extra. Mm-hmm. You know, it looks like one of my golf shots is going so far offline. So they couldn't just stand underneath. They had to run, set their feet, and get ready. So you get Slate, you know, you get him in there. Shep, and Shep's like looking at the ball. The ball's like drifting on him. He's trying to get under it. And if you look down, because what they're supposed to do is look at the rush and then look back up, you just have to fair catch every one. That's the only thing you can do. And he just wasn't able to do it. The wind was blowing. And it wasn't just it was windy. It was a gust. It would be a gust here and a gust there, and that just changed everything. And you saw it even on the field goal.
And then Darius Slayton did a good job when he came into the game.
Yeah, Darius Slayton did. But he's if you look at the list of the who's supposed to be in, Slayton is the next guy. He just is.
And look, you just go down the list of guys that we saw catch punts in practice over the summer. They basically have gone through all of them at this point.
Yeah.
They've literally gone through all of the guys. So that's pretty much where we're at.
You know what's your other big gun that you, as a receiver out there, you know, returning punts?
Right.
You just don't.
100%. All right, 201-939-4513. You're listening to Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Giants. Make sure you go and subscribe to the Giants Huddle podcast, folks. Is the Sean Harris episode up there yet, Pearson? Not yet, right? That'll be up there later this afternoon. By the time you're listening to this on the podcast feed, it probably will be. My interview with Sean O'Hara, we break down everything Giants, Washington, and we look ahead to the Jets as well. Good offensive line discussion from Sean on that show, talking about how the group kind of came together this week and played a little bit better. And you also have a rapid reaction with Howard and Madeline. That's up there right now from after the game on Sunday. So go check that out on the Giants Huddle podcast. Giants app, giants.com/podcast. Just search for Giants Huddle on your favorite podcast platform. Also search for the Giants Hangout. It's our brand new podcast. Howard's on the Monday show with Lance and Russ. And then we have our Thursday edition with Madeline Casillas and Brandon London. So go check that out to search for Giants Hangout. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, please leave a 5-star positive review for all of our podcasts. It really does help us out as people search for Giants content on podcast platforms.
Nice.
201-939-4513. Let's get back to the phones. Well, not back, but let's start on the phones and go to Julian in Florida. Julian, you're up first. Hey, what's up?
John, Howard, how are you guys doing today?
What's up, Julian?
Very good.
Good, man. All right, so listen, when I call you guys, when I call this show, long-time listener, by the way, since 2015, I believe. When I call this show, I like to think of you guys as, like, my therapist, as a Giants fan. Uh-huh. So I like to be able to say what I want to say, obviously, without cursing and anything like that, but I want to get some things off my chest. So if you guys would allow me to do that as a Giants fan, I'd appreciate
that. Go right ahead, Julian. It's all you. The floor is yours.
All right, awesome. Now, when Andrew Thomas is out, when Saquon Barkley is out, when these key players are out, you just can't help but feel like they're being missed, correct? Like, they need to be in this game for us to play. I live in Miami, Florida. I went to that Dolphins game. Mm-hmm. And you could just feel the presence of Saquon being gone, Thomas being gone. And you know and you feel that if they were in that game, it would be very different. I'm not saying we would have won, but we would have competed a little bit better. To your point, Schmelz, that you just said probably like 20 minutes ago, when your run game is going, your pass, your PA is going, and your passing is progressing tremendously. It just shows with Tua and the Miami Dolphins. That running game is the best in the NFL, which makes Tua get those fast releases off even better. The play action's even better. It just, when you have a good running game, your pass game is going to be better. Now, to my point about Andrew Thomas and Saquon Barkley, when they're not on the field, you feel it. For some reason, and I'm a Daniel Jones guy, but when Tyrod's back there, I don't miss Daniel Jones for a second. I for some reason, Tyrod just feels like he gives us a better chance. Now, I'm a Daniel Jones fan, and he's our number one quarterback, and I get it. We gave him the contract. But I was at that Miami game when Tyrod came in. I watched Daniel Jones for three quarters, or maybe even four. I think he went down in the fourth. It all became a blur after a while. But when I saw Tyrod get in there and just start hitting those, I mean, like, his release was quicker. He was hitting Waller in tight windows. Even that touchdown against the Commanders to Waller.
No, that was a great throw. It was a great throw.
That was a tight throw. Yes, exactly. Just like, it makes me wonder, could Daniel have hit that? But all I wanted to say is Tyrod gave us a chance to beat the Bills, which a game that a lot of us Giants fans felt like we had no shot in hell. But he looks smoother when he's – even when the pocket collapses, Tyrod just looks smoother when he's getting out of there. He's a little bit more elusive than Daniel. I don't think anyone's going to disagree. Daniel's athletic, but Tyrod just looks a little bit more elusive. He has a quicker release, and he spreads the ball, and he's hitting those tight windows. That Darren Waller touchdown goes to show. So I guess my point is, you know, I'm living in Miami, and I get a lot of people that are like, Daniel Jones, and, you know, of course they're going to talk their stuff. Can you guys explain to the football fans and maybe that people that don't understand how that contract is going to work out? Like, how exactly does the contract work out with Daniel Jones? Because I hear a lot of people say, oh, it's a 2-year thing when it's a 4-year thing. I know that you guys have broken this down before, but if you could maybe dumb it down for people that don't really understand it,
sure.
Could you break that down? And I'll leave you guys off with one more thing. As honest watchers of the game, I know you guys work for the Giants, and I get it, but as watchers of the game of football, can you agree that Tyrod just looks a little bit better out there than Daniel Jones? And I'll leave you guys with that. And I appreciate all your hard work, fellas. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Julian. Howard, I'll let you answer the question.
The last part is, does Tyrod look better than Daniel? Not really. And I know that the facts look bad when you say something like that. I'm telling you guys, Daniel played a lot without Saquon. It just wasn't good for him.
And he got hit a million times, and Tyrod has not got hit a million times this year.
And I was kind of laughing at the stat that kept getting thrown out over and over again, how the quarterback from Washington?
Sam Howell.
He was the most sacked guy in the NFL. I'm like, because Daniel's been hurt.
So, they were actually like neck and neck before the Daniel injury. No pun intended.
No, I'm like, pun intended. So like, when you're getting hit that much, it's hard, you know. And a lot of times he was getting hit, you know, in the second step of a 3-step drop. That has nothing to do with quick releases or anything. That just was unfortunately, and the guys would tell you, the guys up front would tell you, it was just really, really bad line play, and he was the subject of that. And when there's no, you know, real threat to keep guys honest, they just tee off and come after you. And if you get down way, way down, they really tee off and come after you. So, you know, the addition of Saquon has helped out a lot.
And the defense playing better has helped, Howard. That's the other part of this that people aren't realizing. Like,
the defense isn't helping out. Defense is changing the game. They're playing an elite level of defense right now, that if they were playing that at that rate the entire time, it could have been a little different down the road. Because you just get more opportunities.
Like, for example, the Seahawks game. The Seahawks game wasn't that much different than the Commander and Buffalo games.
No.
Except you had that terrible pick six at the goal line. And that changed everything. If they score a touchdown there instead of throwing the pick six, and look, no one's defending Daniel on that. It was a bad throw. It was a bad decision. It was a bad play. That's 14-10. Or 14-6. Instead, it turns into 21-3.
Yep.
And then the floodgates open, and then you don't have a chance because you're trying to throw every down.
Because everybody gets, you know, kind of down when you get way down.
Correct.
That happens.
Well, and then the pass rush, they don't have to worry about the run anymore. Yeah. They just go right to the quarterback, all that stuff, no Saquon, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Look, has Tyrod looked better the last couple weeks? Yeah, but that's because the conditions around him have been better. You know what I mean? That's why.
Yeah, but I think also, like, you know, I know we're supposed to be playing elite defenses, but the elite of the elite defenses we've already played, they look the elite of the elite.
No, Washington's not an elite defense. They're in the bottom, and we said this on the shows last week, bottom quartile of the league in terms of EPA like per play success and all that stuff.
Yeah, I said, but we've been playing the elite of the elite defenses in the beginning, and now we're not. So, and I'm not knocking anybody's defenses out there, please, but you know, you're
Jets defense this week's pretty good, though.
I'm about to say, Jets defense is pretty good, so whoever's playing, whether it's Tyrod or Daniel, they're going to have their hands full.
Correct.
They just are, and and all the wonderful, you know, accolades we've been giving the offensive line, they still give up 5 sacks, right? And it's not going to get better this week because they're going to have better guys and guys that are hungry because they're going to be like, hey, look, this is our stadium kind of argument. They're, you know, whatever, you know, bulletin board material they'll try to use to get themselves hyped up. And it's funny that that's something that people still do at this age, but they'll still do it. So it'll be interesting to see.
Right. And I'll just say one other thing. And again, this isn't taking anything away from a Tyrod Taylor, but he's done a really nice job since he's come in and play.
I love the Tyrod's play.
I think he's been great.
Mm-hmm.
But as people, you know, think it's been so much better and everything like that, on the year, Howard, how many points per game are the Giants averaging?
I don't know.
12.1. Okay. Last 2 weeks, how many total points have the Giants scored with Tyrod Taylor as a starting quarterback?
Probably 12.1.
No, they scored 14 this week, and they scored 9 against the Bills. That's 23 points. 23 divided by 2. That's 11.5. They average more points per game with Daniel Jones as a starter than Tyrod Taylor.
It's whatever.
Again, I'm just giving a bigger, broader perspective in terms of what you're looking at. And the best half of offensive football we've seen the Giants play all year happened with Daniel Jones and Saquon Barkley on the field in the second half against Arizona when they scored 31 points in 2 quarters.
Look, I'm not.
I'm just trying to put everything in context here.
I'll put it in context.
And I'll leave it there.
I'll put it in context for you. I'm not a fan. I want the Giants to win.
Right, of course.
That's all I want. I'm not doing the whole who's going to do what, when.
Well, you better be ready because let's go to Wilson in Roxbury. He's up next.
Wilson.
Wilson's back for more with Howard. Hi, Wilson.
Hey, listen, I like pain. That's why I keep coming back.
What do you got today, Wilson?
Keep my bat down.
Are you happy today? Are you happy today, Wilson? Are you a happy man?
I'm happy.
Good.
I'm happy. Listen, I just know, but it is so asinine and moronic that I not only have to listen to New York radio for this whole week, but not some of the callers, that somehow the Giants are better off with Tyrod Taylor than Daniel Jones. I mean, that is beyond. I'm not stupid. That's the word that comes up. I mean, I like Tyrod, but we know what Tyrod Taylor is. And Daniel Jones, to me, it has a top 10 arm. He's a top 5 running quarterback, and he's tougher than 95% of the quarterbacks in this league. But for some reason, I think it's just too toxic for him here. And Brian Daboll doesn't help. I mean, Brian Daboll can just say, when Daniel's healthy, he's my starting quarterback, but he doesn't do it. So I have a theory.
Well, no, Wilson, hold on, Wilson. He said exactly that 2 weeks ago at a press conference. He was asked after the Bills game, is Daniel your starting quarterback when he comes back? And he said, yes, he is.
I remember, John, but
yes.
That was after a loss. Okay. I just want to ask something. Do you think, and I don't know this, and I'm just going to ask you guys this, was this Joe Shane's and Brian Daboll's call, or was this John Mara's call about Daniel Jones has to be? If it was John Mara's call, It's organization malpractice.
It's Joe Shane's call, Wilson. Joe Shane makes those decisions.
Okay, I don't know, Johnny. I'm asking you.
Real quick, I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story, okay? Mm-hmm. And I hope I don't get in trouble for this. But,
don't hang up on me because I want to...
No. 100%. I'm going to tell a quick story.
Okay.
So the day they were getting up to the deadline, the 4 o'clock franchise tag deadline with Daniel Jones, what was it, a Monday, I think, or in February, whatever it was.
I was sitting here.
And we were doing the show that day. We're walking back and forth to the studio, and you literally see as you get to the deadline, and I'm not going to give names, giant front office personnel having conversations and meetings. His agents are here. They're going in and out of rooms. They're having meetings. They're talking to these guys, and it wasn't ownership in those meetings. It was Giants front office personnel in those meetings. Not to say that they're not consulting with ownership. John Mara, obviously, when you're talking about franchise quarterbacks and contracts of that size, he's going to be involved in those conversations. But it was Joe Shane and obviously Kevin Abrams on the financial side, Ed Triggs, all those guys that were putting that together and are making those decisions. So that's who's making those calls. John Mara obviously has input. He has approval. He's the owner. When you're going to send out...
It's his money.
Yeah, he's the one writing the checks, Wilson, 100%. But that is Joe Shane's decision as to whether or not they want to bring Daniel Jones back and what his contract is going to be.
Okay, I want to ask... Howard, I want to ask you this because you're a former player.
Mm-hmm.
Could it get so toxic in one place for you? Because of the media, the fans, and everything, that even though the organization knows that you are a good player and you can help, it could be so toxic that you have to say, you know what? We don't want to do it, but we don't have a choice, and just start fresh somewhere else. Because listen, you put Daniel Jones right on the Atlanta Falcons. Not only they'll run away with that division this year, probably they'll run away with the division 2 years from now. So is it better for the Giants to say it's too toxic for you, Daniel, here? Get a second rounder and 2 third round picks and just move on. And I don't know, because to me, it's just, I love Daniel, but sometimes situations could be too toxic, and it looks too, it looks like it's too, what happened? Let me ask something. What happens if Tara Taylor beats the Jets next week? How can they go back to Daniel? I mean, you know what's going to happen on New York radio? It's going to be like, what are they doing? They're crazy. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, but Wilson, you have to think of it like this, Wilson.
And thanks for the look. Thanks for the call. For the call. I appreciate
that. That was one of Wilson's nicer calls.
Good question.
But in theory, and I hope I don't offend anyone, because I'm from Alabama and everything, and I know that we've had bad comments in the press. When you're playing a game and they're paying you money to play, you don't really care what's going on, you know, how you're perceived.
And Daniel does a good job of blocking that stuff.
Yeah, you just want to play and give it your best, and mm-hmm. you know, and it becomes a moment of, hey, I'm doing my job, the best I can do my job, and if the team doesn't want me, I don't care what I'm hearing from the outside world. I played here for 13 seasons. After I got the starting job, they drafted tight ends. They brought somebody in every year.
Pete Mitchell.
They brought everybody in. And I started the entire time. I played until I got tired of playing. I'm like, man, I'm done. I'm like, it's just, I'm done. I'm tired. And I stopped. I could have went to another team and kept playing. I was getting calls. She's like, hey, how you doing? Are you really going to retire? I'm like, yeah. I got babies. I just had twins.
True.
So like, it's not about.
Neither were your babies anymore.
Yeah, they're adults now. But it's not about for the player. It's not about the media and everything that you hear. And I've had media members, you know, ask me, well, when are you going to do this? And Mike, if they throw me the ball, I'll catch it. Like, but well, why aren't you catching more balls? I said, well, that guy over there with the number 92 on. Someone has to help block him.
Was that Paul Dottino asking you that question?
Paul Dottino asked me that one time when we were playing Green Bay. I got onto him. He goes, I never said that. I'm like, Paul, you were just like everybody else. And like, it was just, I just laughed. You do what they ask you to do, and you try to do it well. That's all you can do.
And our previous call, mm-hmm. Julian asked about the Daniel Jones contract. I forgot to do it. I'll do mm-hmm. it for you now. And again, don't want to talk about other people's money. I don't know the exact details of the contract. I'm going off of what's being publicly reported at overthecap.com. So I'm just mm-hmm. looking at overthecap.com. These are the details that are on there. If it's exactly right or not, I can't tell you. But I can tell you this was on Over the Cap, and usually they're pretty good with their numbers. So in short, he said, we want me to simplify it. I'll simplify it. If the Giants want to get out of the contract after next year, they would take a $22 million cap hit that you could spread over a couple of seasons. That simple. That simple. Yeah. That's and that would be the dead money if you want to get out of it after next year. If you get out of it after 3 years, you actually save money on the cap moving forward. So that's basically what the contract is. And that was the back and forth, right? That's why guaranteed money is important to players, because mm-hmm. you're getting that no matter what. Mm-hmm. For the team, you want to have an out where you can get out and it's not going to kill you financially. And that's mm-hmm. what the back and forth is between player and team. So again, according to Over the Cap, that's pretty much where you're at. You can get out after the 2024 season with a $20 million cap hit, and that would be, you know,
spread out over a couple years.
You if you make it a post-June 11th, a June 1st cut, you can yeah. spread that out over a couple years. That's correct. So that's where you would be, and that's at that point, that's less than 10% of the cap, so that is not like a crippling number that's going to murder you.
I always laugh when they say this, when they talk about that, the cap hit and everything, because that just means the owner gets to keep that money.
Well, I mean, you would then theoretically spend that money on another player.
Yeah, but if he don't have to.
Yeah, but the way the Giants operate, they've been up against the cap every year. Some owners won't.
Some owners be like, well,
Giants will.
Cap hit $20 million. Let's see where I'm getting a boat this year.
And remember, the reason, folks, just to explain to you how these contracts work, the reason that's quote-unquote dead money is that money has actually already been paid out to the player.
Yeah.
Right? That's been paid out in a bonus check. You know, I don't know how, you know, different contracts have the bonus, signing bonus go out in different ways. Some of the first two years.
They basically say, like, if you got $100 million signing bonus and you had it over 5 years, it would be $20 million a year.
Well,
that's spread that way.
Well, that's how it's put on the cap, right?
Yeah,
but the actual check, you might get 50 in year one and 50 in year two, depending on how the contract is set up.
I don't know how they do their money, but I'm saying that. But the way that it affects the cap,
it can get spread out.
They try to spread it out evenly.
That is correct. Yeah. But in terms of cash, and that's why it's dead, right?
Yep.
So that money is still on your cap books, but the check's already been written. So that's why it's on your cap, even though the player's not still on your roster. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Hugo's in New Jersey. He's up next. Hi, Hugo.
Hey, good afternoon, guys.
Howdy.
I guess I'm going to try to bring it back to football now. So, first, very happy with the win, obviously, and the defensive effort. And, you know, in those uniforms and in that stadium decor, I think it was a bit of an homage to the mid-80s Giants, both in substance as well as, you know, the way everything was decorated and the way the uniforms look. So,
Field looked great. Field looked awesome.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah, it was really nice to see. So here's what I guess what I'm looking for at some point this season is for a convergence of good offensive play with good defensive play.
How about good special teams play too, Hugo? Can we can we get all three in the same game?
Well, I'm going to get to that. but let's start offense and defense. Because, you know, I've been talking about the defense because I think that's where we've had health and where we could control things.
Yeah.
And I think we'll get better offensive play when reinforcements come back, right? So a couple of weeks ago, I said more physicality, especially from the back end. And I think Howard called it earlier when he said swarming. I mean, that's essentially an outcome of that, more of being more physical. I said last week, let's do better against the run, and shout out to Wink with the heavy man, three down linemen fronts and more A'shaun Robinson. It makes both Lennon, Columbia, Maryland, and myself happy. So shout out. So stop. I think the next phase is more pressure from the edges, and Thibodeau's coming on. I think that will improve when, and I know I've called him this before, when our situational pass rusher comes back off of IR. So maybe someone could ask Coach Stable that question, if it's a long-term thing or he's going to come off IR.
Just so you know, when he was drafted, he had a bad knee and ankle and stuff. So that's not situational. That's who he is.
No, I call him a situational pass rusher because he doesn't defend the run all that well. That's what I said.
Oh, wow.
Not because he's not always on the field.
Okay.
So, So having said that, you know, we still have a deep hole to dig ourselves out of, and the next game is obviously another very, very important game. And I'm just wondering if there are not some regrets with the coaching staff about how the preseason and training camp were handled. And I kind of think of this stuff strategically, right? Joe Shane said right before training camp that we have the second youngest team. I think that's what he said. And there were a lot of positions sort of in a state of flux. And, you know, I know it's all the rage to rest players and take it, but what are we hearing now, right? It just young players need to play to develop, right? So that's coming right from the coach's mouth. And did people play enough? And I think I worry about three things, really, but I'll give you one on offense, one on defense, one special teams. Somewhere along the line, the coaching staff got worried about our guard position because we saw a two-man kind of competition become a three-man competition, which then turned into starting Mark Lewinsky, and then somewhere along the line, he became like the fourth guard.
Which, Hugo, by the way, now he's playing like the best guard again. He was really good last week, Lewinsky. Jonathan Allen and Deron Payne were almost silent in that game. He did a great job in that game, Lewinsky.
Well, John, the point, what did you guys tell us in the preseason? The only way to evaluate offensive line play is in pads, right, and in games. They gotta play, right? I don't think it was sorted out because I've never seen something like that where a guy gets in a game, has one bad game, and then he's not only benched, but he's like the last guy off the bench again.
Well, here's what I think, just so you know. I think that they went into this thing thinking that they didn't have enough depth at maybe the offensive line and stuff, so they were trying to save everybody by not letting people play and putting in the younger guys and giving them reps. Turns out that those younger guys wound up having to play after week one because guys started getting hurt. So if we're going on the theory that you just used and you put all the veterans in, let all the veterans play, and then they all get hurt, then the guys that weren't playing would have gotten fewer reps and they wouldn't be ready. So it's 6-1, well, half a dozen. Yeah,
and Hugo, I'll say the other part of that too is that we don't know what they thought of McKeithen in terms of the hierarchy. Because remember, he was hurt. He didn't get back into camp until a few weeks into camp. So if he was there and healthy the whole camp, maybe he would have been ahead of Glowinski a little bit earlier. Mm-hmm. I don't know the answer to that particular question.
Here are the weirder things then, right? Because this involves young guys, right? Mm-hmm. They cut Tyree Phillips, who we presume to be our swing tackle. And what we presume was that Matt Paert was our swing tackle. And then it turns out that they have to take another young guy, Josh Zudu, and move him to left tackle. I guess the point I'm making is none of this was really sorted out well in the preseason. Point to the fact that people
didn't. You don't have to raise your voice. Just listen. Paert got hurt.
No, I'm not raising my voice.
But Paert got hurt. He's hurt.
Yeah. But in those early, like in the Arizona game, for example, Zudu was the left tackle.
Yeah,
Paert wasn't hurt then.
Yeah, he was.
No, he wasn't. He wasn't then. At one point, when they put the thing
on his elbow.
At one point, a coach's decision was made to put a Zudu a tackle ahead of
him. They put him in a tackle after the whatever game that we had just played. I think it was the Cowboys game or whatever. But he was hurt. That's when he started. They put the sleeve on him. Whatever the thing is on his arm.
He wasn't on the injury report.
Not being on the injury report doesn't mean if you're just out there that Evan Neal wasn't on the injury report the whole time and he was hurting.
Okay.
Thank you.
And I'll point out to another thing that
real quick
kind of perplexed me a little bit was the slot corner position was never sorted out. So they moved the Dory in there, and then they put a rookie out there.
It was sorted out. They wanted a Dory in the slot because they wanted Trey Hawkins on the field at outside cornerback. And Trey Hawkins played outside cornerback all throughout the summer. That wasn't something that they didn't sort out, Hugo. They made a conscious decision based on what they saw from Hawkins in the summer at outside cornerback, and they said, we want him on the field.
Yep.
So that was a conscious decision based on a lot of evidence.
Okay. Well, it was practice evidence again. I'd like to see it more in game because I think
he did pretty well
Thanks
in preseason.
You,
games
appreciate
too.
The call.
He did pretty well in preseason too.
Hawkins was good.
Yeah.
He's had some struggles once the season started, which happens. That's why preseason and practice is different than regular season.
Absolutely.
Hugo, the bottom line is that there's no way to completely simulate regular season snaps in August. You just can't do it.
Not in the way they do things now. No, and that's league wide.
Yeah, it's league wide, 100%. All right, let's go to Eric in upstate New York. Eric, you're up next.
Hi, guys. How's it going?
We're great.
So I just wanted to make a statement first and then a follow-up question after that about Wandale Robinson.
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that we have a weapon in him that is very underrated. I don't think people give enough credit to how good he is, and you could see that on that 22-yard catch and run that he had this weekend.
No, look, Eric, we agree. I think Wandale is probably, if you're looking for like a short to mid-range catch, he's their go-to guy in those situations. They like him in the middle of the field to get separation, Howard.
He's exciting. He's quick. Like I said before, he's like comes under that model of the old Patriots receivers when they're all small guys making quick turns, making quick catches in small spaces. That's what they're usually there for.
And the follow-up question, which I'll take off the air, didn't we draft him as a gadget type of player? And, our offense is horrible in the screen game. We seem to be the only offense in the league who cannot run a positive screen play. And I think Wandale is a guy that would do that, what he was drafted for. So, I just want to see what your guys' thoughts were on that.
No, I appreciate it, Eric. Look, Wandale wasn't drafted as a gadget guy. He did do gadget stuff in college. Remember, he was a running back in Nebraska before he went to Kentucky. But then at Kentucky, he ran the full route tree. He was their number one receiver. He like did everything for them, and that's how the Giants drafted him, even though he was good at the gadget stuff, and that's how Paul kind of referenced him a lot in our draft coverage that year. But I tried to point out that, look, you watch his tape at Kentucky. He did everything. He was an outside receiver for them. He ran all the routes. He was a good player. In terms of the screens, Howard, and I tried to make this point last week. I'd like to get your take on it. Screens take a lot of coordination and timing from an offensive line. When you have a million different guys coming in and out that haven't worked together a ton, I got to imagine, and correct me if I'm wrong, as someone that's played alongside offensive linemen throughout his whole career, I got to imagine getting that stuff kind of in sync is tough in the screen game when every week you got different guys up there doing stuff on the offensive line.
I'll say it like this, regardless of who's in there. If you're not blocking well in the pass game at all to begin with, screens are not going to help you. Because
explain.
And this is why. When guys are beating you off the ball and they're two steps behind you when the guy's in the second step of his drop to get to the quarterback, the back has nowhere to go because everybody's already back there.
The screen isn't going to slow that pass rush down at all?
No, it's not slowing it down. It's just for free release. All you're going to do then is throw an interception to a D lineman because they're all going to be in the line of sight.
So you think there's going to be no room for the running back to even make that catch?
If you can't bump them and then let them slide off, because that's what the screen is. You're bumping and sliding them off. If you bump them and slide them off, then you turn and run down and get in front of the carry. If you miss them, then the ball's in the air as the guy, he's reaching for the ball as it's being snapped to the quarterback.
So you're saying there's just going to be too many guys back there in the backfield.
That's why screens don't work again. Like if you notice teams that have better blocking up front run better screens. When Miami, the people reference Miami constantly, the safeties are like 12 to 14 yards deep because they're trying to be on top of those two fast receivers.
Yeah, well, some is 20 yards deep.
Yeah, you know, and they're trying to do that. So when they run the screen, this is what the screen looks like. You have two guys on the outside. They could be a receiver and a tight end. You have one guy coming from inside out to make the block. He doesn't even have to come to make the block.
There's not enough guys in the box.
Guys in the box to slow it down. So he doesn't go out to make a block. He just goes up the field. And once he goes up the field, he's not even really touching the linebacker. He just runs across his face. And if you have to slow down or stop to avoid a lineman and Tyreek Hill's catching the ball 15 to 20 yards from you, you're not catching him. You should just turn around and start running that way and just try to see if you can cut him off. That's what you're supposed to do. So that's why screens are working for teams like that. It works for the San Francisco 49ers. A little bit of the same thing.
Andy Reid and the Chiefs are a great screen team.
Great screen team. But that's because their lines are blocking pretty good. The Eagles run a decent screen game. Like, if your line's blocking pretty good, that means that everybody's kind of healthy and the defense is on their heels almost.
This you got Jerry Rice on the NFL Network.
Absolutely, absolutely. So that's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at it like you got to have better line play up front before you can create something that's going to be out on the – because basically most screens, whether people realize it or not, the back is still in the backfield when he catches the ball and everybody kind of folds out and he goes. They've started to migrate the screen out to the outside where you dump it to the outside receiver and the linemen are coming out to block him. Like I said, if the lineman that's going out can't touch the guy in front of him, the guy that he's supposed to be blocking is in the line of fire when you're trying to throw the ball to the guy on the outside. You can't do it.
201-939-4513. Let's go to line two. Let's go to Diana in Myrtle Beach, Pearson, and then Lou in Texas. You'll be up next. You'll wrap us up. Diana, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call today.
Thanks for calling in.
After hearing Wilson speak, I just really had to call in defense of Daniel Jones. I have been an advocate for the Giants for a long time, and I think having a porous offensive line ended Eli Manning's career a little bit early. But what I want to say is when Tyrod Taylor came in, that's also when Saquon Barkley came back. So you really have to account for that. I don't think any quarterback does well under duress. Look at Josh Allen against our defense, did not do well. Look at Jalen Hurts against the Jets, multiple interceptions, did not do well.
Yep.
So I think people have to ease up a little bit on Daniel Jones, and you have to really look at what he brings. He has been much better with protecting the ball. His legs are excellent. He runs very, very well. I think he's definitely on the money, which is why people call him Danny Dimes. And I think with the addition to getting some of our offensive linemen back, with Saquon back in, I think you'll see a different Daniel Jones when he returns. So I wish people would just light off him a bit.
Well, thank you.
Diana, appreciate the call.
There she goes. You got the gaslight for Daniel. I like it. I mean, look, Daniel, when healthy, he kind of proved it last year. When healthy and everybody's kind of in place, they play better. The problem is that last year that they had great success in close games. It was a lot of close games, and they made it to the playoffs. The problem is going to be this year, you're going to be playing teams, I tell everybody, that have Super Bowl aspirations. They don't have, I hope we have a winning season aspirations. They have, we're going to the playoffs, and we're going to make a long run at it.
We want the bye. Exactly.
So now your game has got to come up to try to get close to that level. So, and you're not, if you're not playing bottom feeders, It doesn't look the same.
And again, Howard, I'll say the same thing to your point, and I've said this before, mm-hmm. and I don't want to sound like a broken record. The Giants beat one playoff team last year.
Yeah.
They beat the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yeah.
And that was in a game, to your point, again, with the close games, literally down to the final play of the game.
Well, they beat Minnesota. That's kind of two playoffs.
Well, in the playoffs.
Okay.
But they lost to Minnesota in the regular season.
That's
but yes,
true too. That's true too.
They did beat Minnesota in the playoffs.
Yeah.
That is correct.
Yeah.
But otherwise, they lost to Detroit
mm-hmm.
rather handily.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to Seattle. They lost to Dallas twice.
Mm-hmm.
They lost to Philadelphia twice.
Yep.
All right, and all the teams you've played so far this year, until this week against Washington, all of them are playoff teams.
Except for Arizona.
Oh, except for Arizona, correct.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the game that they won.
Yep.
Right? So all the games you lost, thank you,
mm-hmm.
through this first month and a half of the year, have been two playoff teams. And again, we'll see what the Bills are now, you know, after their pretty terrible loss to New England this week.
I tell people all the time, you can't be prisoners of the moment.
No, you can't be.
Some teams are going to have back. There's not going to be somebody going 17-0 and then.
Well, look at the 49ers. Like, we all think the 49ers are still good. They've lost two in a row now.
Yeah, but
it happens.
Don't be prisoners of the moment because those teams and those personnel, they got good personnel and they'll come back.
Yeah, Dallas, the 49ers, the Bills, and the Dolphins,
mm-hmm.
which were the three, you know, lopsided losses the Giants have suffered this year. They're all expected to be in contention for the championship games in their conference.
NFC East, AFC East championship game. They all believe they're going to win their divisions, and they think they're going to go, you know, have a shot.
And so, Seattle right now looks like they're going to be a playoff team too in the NFC. They've played well.
Yeah, they're like it's going to be between them and San Francisco for that division.
All right, let's go to Lou in Texas. He's up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Hi, Lou.
Hey guys, how's it going today?
We're great.
Right.
So got two quick questions. First one. JMS, haven't seen much on what's going on with his injury. Wanted to see if you guys know anything. And secondly, based on the upcoming schedule, do you realistically think this team could be 6-6 at their bye?
Wow. Based on the upcoming schedule, could they be 6-6 at the bye? The answer is, excuse me, John had to step away from the mic for a second. But I think they could be, but it's going to take a lot. And I mean that. I'm trying to keep everything realistic for fans and stuff because when they're asking me questions, like the health of everyone – is a big thing. All of a sudden, Saquon's back, right? That helps out tremendously. But the guys that are playing out of position, some of them on the offensive line, you can see defensive linemen talking to each other like, that guy's not supposed to be there. And I can get him.
Mm-hmm.
I can get him. And I'm shocked that they don't go after some guys all game long. Maybe they just get tired. What's been happening is that if they have any time, and I do mean any time, if they don't get to the quarterback of the Giants, whoever it may be at the time, there's going to be a ball launched into the sky for one of these guys that are running, you know, 24 miles an hour in practice, and it's noticeable. When Saquon kind of comes out of the backfield and looks like he's going to run out into the flat for a dump down, it's noticeable because the safety isn't quite looking at the guy that's running by him. He takes a second to take one more look at Saquon before he turns around to chase him. So it's those things are noticeable. So could they be 6-6 by the bye? They could be. Will they be? That would require a lot more, you know, ability on the offensive line to, you know, they'll have to figure out how can we consistently run the ball, one. Number two, how can we consistently get, you know, get some pass protection without, you know, having to have six guys and seven guys trying to chip and everything, and can we just get guys out in the routes and keep our quarterback upright and not injured? That's two. And three, and probably most importantly, they're going to have to play – not 100% error-free, but pretty close to error-free football from an offensive standpoint. And then you got to have things on special teams to work out. You can't have the miscue. And again, I feel like I'm beating on Shep. I love Shep. But you just can't have any miscues. If they don't muff that punt, they
probably pitch a shutout.
Yeah.
Yep.
So those are the things that are happening. The defense is increasingly getting better and better. If they continue to stay healthy, they're going to continue to get better. Dexter Lawrence right now, it looks like he's getting ready to go on one of his tirades where everybody's in trouble. That's kind of how he's looking at it. So if he goes on this on that little run that he usually tries to go on, it's going to be some teams. It's not like you can just say, okay, we'll double him. That's not going
to
work.
Hey, look, you're going to have to play, Lou, as well as you did against Washington and to some extent Buffalo.
Yep.
You know, if you come out and you play like you did against the first half against Arizona, you're not going to beat any team you're going to play. You know what I mean? So you're going to have to come out and, to Howard's point, protect the ball on offense, you know, and then to have the defense continue to play the strong game that they're doing. That's,
the defense is going to play a strong game, and they got, and the offense is going to play the first half of Arizona and the second half of Arizona, the first half of the team we just played,
Washington.
So that, put those two halves together.
One other quick question, guys.
Yeah.
When Thomas comes back, can you see Pugh maybe kicking inside?
Yeah, it's a good question, Lou. And I've kind of thought about this, Howard. I'm curious to get your take. Let's assume you get Thomas and Neal back at the two tackle spots, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you think the two – and when you get – and this is when it gets even trickier. You get Schmitz back at center. I'm pretty sure Bredesen's going to be one of the two starting guards.
Mm-hmm.
So who's the other starting guard? For me, based on how well these guys have played, I would have Glowinski in there. I think he's been better than the other two guys overall, but they just did bring in Pugh full-time. How do you think they're going to work that?
If it were me, and it's just me,
right?
I would, if we go down, because they haven't really set the guards, so to speak, except for Bredesen.
No, it's been all over the place.
It's been all over the place. I put Pugh in.
Okay.
I put Pugh in because he's got the attitude. You know, right now, he, like fresh off the couch, all this giddy stuff. And I keep the other two guys ready to go because, don't know how long he's going to be able to hold up.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just me being honest with him. He's an older guy. He's had a knee. He's underweight. He's fighting himself into football shape now. Don't know if he can make it all the way into football shape before, because this is a long. It's not like we got like five games left. We got a long season left.
So by the way, Howard, it's funny. I talked to him and Lou. Appreciate the call. Good stuff, man. And I think both Glowinski and Pugh would be ahead of McKeithen there, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And if it's Pugh, I wouldn't have a problem with that either. I think him and I just don't. We haven't seen Pugh play guard yet, really. To be honest with you, I haven't seen that to make a judgment on who I think is better, Pugh or Glowinski. They probably have a better idea based on what's happened in practice.
But here's the other thing I would say: I maybe wouldn't put Pugh in there since I know he can play tackle.
So you want him to be the backup swing man, right?
I need protection.
Oh, I hear you. So here's it. So I had a conversation with Pugh. He was our interview on the Giants Huddle podcast last Friday. Everybody should go listen to that. It was a really good interview, about 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we replayed part of it on the pregame show on Sunday. So I was talking to Pugh, and I said, Justin, 280, and is that where you want to play at? That's where he weighed. I mean, 290.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, John, my last full year in Arizona, I played between 280 and 285. And he said that's where he wants to be. He said he compared his playing style to a gnat, where he's going to be all over. He's going to be here. He's going to be there. He might beat me once, but I'm always going to come back. I'm going to hit you. I'm going to be a little bit more aggressive, a little bit more, use your quickness and technique mobile.
Yeah, he's probably more mobile.
But I thought it was interesting to want to play 280 at guard. That is very, very light around the league.
Well, I tell you what. I know there are guys around the league that are big, menacing guys, but if you're light and can get to, like, I think the center is a great example. The center from Philadelphia. Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, Kelsey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's not that big of a guy.
Yeah, you'll see that at center. You don't see that at guard as
I
much,
know,
though.
But he's still taking on some of the bigger guys in the league.
No, sure he is.
A really, really good job at it.
Absolutely.
So you're seeing guys, it's becoming one of those things where, okay, we need the guys that can stop this guy. What's he look like? Well, he's not quite 300, but he can stop him? Yeah, put him in there.
All right, fair enough.
And that's what they're going to do.
All right, before
doing.
We say goodbye, we started a minute late, so we'll go one more minute here, Howard, real quick. Just your thoughts on the Jet game moving forward here. What do the Giants need to do to beat the Jets on Sunday?
Well, the first thing they have to do is the defense has to play the same kind of game they played before. They got to keep coming after Wilson. They if they get after him a lot, knowing that they have a big-time receiver out there, but get after him a lot, make him have some error throws, he could give the ball up.
Yes, he can.
Yeah, and he's not above that. A lot of multiple looks are going to be hard for him to keep up with. So they got to, first off, shut down the run and make them one-dimensional where they have to throw the ball. Once they do that, just get after Wilson with all these different looks, and let's see if you can get some balls thrown to you. From an offensive standpoint, they got to protect the ball.
But, Howard, I literally, you took the words out of my mouth. I'm gonna give you a stat to back you up here real quick, and then you can finish your point. Jets are tied for third most takeaways in the league with 13.
Mm-hmm.
And that's with them having a bye.
Yeah.
And most of the other teams not having a bye.
Yep.
Go ahead.
They have to protect the ball with all they can. You have to know the Sauce is out there. Sauce is a really good cover guy.
And I imagine he'll be back coming off the bye.
Well, we hope. I don't like anybody being hurt or anything. And I'm not,
concussion protocol for him, by the way, for the people that don't know.
Then really hope that he's back. I don't like that. But you got those guys out there that can cover really well and get to the ball. So you want to make sure that every pass is like directly on them, and there's not going to be this opportunity to how do I say this without being mean? You got to do everything right. Not, you don't have to do anything above the numbers. You don't have to do anything outside of a reality. Just do the things right. They're going to be coming after you up front. Don't, you know, keep it 3 points. Keep it 6 points. Keep it whatever it
Howard,
is.
Look at how.
Just keep it tight the and win.
I'm sorry for interrupting. I apologize. Mm-hmm. Look at how the Jets won their two big games they won this year.
Mm-hmm.
They beat the Bills in week one. How'd they beat the Bills in week one?
A lot of pressure.
And
turnovers.
They took the ball away from yeah. Josh Allen.
Mm-hmm.
How'd they beat the Eagles 2 weeks ago?
A lot of pressure. Turnovers.
Bingo.
Yeah.
That's how this Jets team is not going to beat you with their offense unless Breece Hall pops a couple big ones, yeah. which, by the way, he's awesome.
Awesome.
Really yeah. capable of doing that. So you got to stop the run on defense. That's number one.
You got to be a swarming all over the yep. ball. Everybody got to be nine guys in the clip all the time. Like I said, you get close to Zach, he'll probably give it up a couple times. If he gives you the opportunity mm-hmm. to get an interception, please catch the ball.
And the Jets have 8 interceptions mm-hmm. this year, folks. 8. And five fumble recoveries. So they do it both ways now. They'll rush the passer. They'll strip the ball from the quarterback because yep, they have such yep, good pass rushers.
Yep, yep.
And that secondary, Quincy Williams, Quinnen's younger brother, has been unbelievable yep. for them. We know about DJ Reed. We know about Sauce Gardner. So really good team. Really good team on defense. Yes. You have to protect the football.
And like I said, and if you get a couple scores up on them, touchdowns, the defense plays different.
And the Jets' offensive line, by the way, it's not as disheveled as the Giants' one yeah. is. Their offensive line has problems yeah. health-wise. They have a lot of injuries up
okay,
there.
Okay, so, you know, here's another chance for the defense, our defense to get healthy yep. and sacks and stuff. So that's what you have to do.
Howard, it was good seeing you, man.
Good to see
it's
you.
It's always a pleasure.
We'll be seeing each other a lot more, seems like. All right.
Well, I'm not going to be on Tuesday every week, but okay. we'll be rotating
around. Who's coming in here?
It'll probably be Madeline.
Oh, okay.
You'd rather look at her than me anyway.
I hate to say it, but yes.
If you did it, I'd be a little concerned. Everybody, thanks for being with us on Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by Cadillac, the official luxury vehicle of the New York Football Giants. For Howard Gross, I am John Strong. Great job on the phones today, guys. Good, thoughtful calls.
Yeah.
Thought you guys had some real good questions. Good, nuanced conversation for once, which we don't have enough of. And Wilson, stop listening to local sports talk and national TV shows.
Oh my God.
You base all your complaints about them. Just turn it off. Turn it off. But don't turn us off. Keep us on. We'll see you next time on Big Blue Kickoff Live tomorrow at 12:30. Me and Dottino.
Live Nation presents Concert Week. Now through May 14th, get $25 tickets to over 5,000 shows. That's up to 75% off a summer full of your favorite artists like 21 Savage, Alanis Morissette, Cage the Elephant, Celeste Barber, Dierks Bentley, Fade, Hootie and the Blowfish, Janet Jackson, Kidz Bop Kids, Meghan Trainor, Bissell Pluma, Sarah McLachlan. Get tickets to more than 5,000 summer shows for just $25. Until now through May 14th. Visit LiveNation.com/Concert Week to learn more and plan your summer with Sean Paul, Sum 41, 30 Seconds to Mars, oh, and Two Door Cinema Club.
I'm so excited to tell you JCPenney and country music singer-songwriter Walker Hayes are partnering together on a new limited-time men's collection for the everyday guy. What I love about Walker Hayes is his laid-back nature. He's a family man and being a country megastar while also having 7 kids. You know he likes to keep his style cool and casual. This new collection is perfect for the guy living the t-shirt life or someone wanting some fresh options that feel just as good. It's easy to wear, affordable styles that celebrate the ultimate family man, along with the quality, durability, and sensibility dads appreciate. Available online Saturday, May 4th at jcp.com and in-store Thursday, May 16th. Just in time for Father's Day. Limited time only. JCPenney, make it count.